So do you recognize these red doors? Anybody recognize these red doors? They belong to the main building, main hall at St. Edward's University on the hill in South Austin. A few years ago, St. Ed's used these doors in an ad campaign and threw up all kinds of words. We saw them on billboards all around town. We saw them on our TVs if we were watching. Next to these doors, the first round of campaign were the words, "Stepping through these doors opens up a world of opportunities." And then some of those ads, you see the kids push those doors open, college students, and on the other side, you'd see the horizon, the city skyline, Austin, on the edge. If you put your back to those doors, one of the best views of Austin is on the hill at that campus. The idea is, here's your future. And then on some of those ads, they turned around and opened the doors, and the student would go in, and suddenly, instead of being in Main Hall, they were in Bangladesh, or Great Britain, or Berlin. It's a great idea, a world of possibilities through the doors. You know, I think that many Sundays coming through those doors. I come into the room and think, holy smoke, we have no idea what you, holy God, are going to be up to this day. Teach us to hang on. Some Sundays I come in thinking, oh, it's going to be like this. And it takes the whole service for me to push the doors open and think, whoa, what wild possibilities are ahead. If there was ever a time we would need this kind of thinking, it is right now, isn't it? In the culture we live in. Well, this ad campaign, as it matured, they kept the doors and they changed the words. And later, the lines came, and you may recognize this next line. It said, St. Ed's, we will teach you how to think. Did you see that one? The ideas aren't new in either one of these. They are familiar ideas. The first one, I can't help but hear Walter Cronkite's voice in a picture of the UT Tower where he says, "What starts here changes the world." You know that one? Doesn't it sound a lot like this world of possibilities? And the next one, how to think, sounds a whole lot like, in fact, it's the very words of David Foster Wallace, who was an author, who gave in a commencement address at Kenyon College in, just outside of Columbus, Ohio, back in 2005. He said the most pervasive cliche in a commencement speech genre is that a liberal arts education is not much, so much, about filling you up with knowledge as it is teaching you how to think. It's the very words, right? But he went on to say the really significant education in thinking isn't about our capacity to think, but our choice on what to think about, which is remarkably relevant. What are you choosing to think about these days? Turns out this is one of the concerns of our faith, the choice of what to think about. Our faith involves not just conviction or behavior and words and deeds. It also has a lot to do with what occupies our mind. It matters what's on your mind, even now. Which the Apostle Paul, of course, has some suggestions for us, and he lays them out here. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, anything worthy of praise, think about these things, he tells us. And you know, he writes this from, of all places, a prison cell, dark and dank, captive. And these are the words he chooses to write. Paul thinks he may be facing death, and he tells them and us that he's been wondering which might be better, to live or to die. He says he prefers now to live, and he's about to tell them that he's learned to be content in every circumstance. Now, wouldn't you like that? With your knuckles tight on the steering wheel as the traffic is backing up and somebody else cuts in, and instead of going that way, you're actually getting further, or waiting in the line at the grocery store, or wherever it is that we take our mind off of life and put it on death. Content even there, Paul? Yep, content in all circumstances. And just before those lines, Paul writes, always, always rejoice. Don't be anxious about anything, but with thanksgiving, make your request to God, and the peace of God that passes all understanding. that passes all understanding will guard your mind and your heart in Christ Jesus. Just after that, that he slips in these words on what we can be thinking about, as if they're part of a secret on living a non-anxious, even a joyous life. The mind of the peace that passes all understanding will come down to a choice of thoughts. Your choice of your thoughts. My choice of my thoughts. And the thoughts are set out here by Paul like a great Thanksgiving feast on this huge table. No shortage of words here from him. Back in the early 1900s, there's this man whose name cracks me up. It's not funny, but his name is Baron Friedrich von Hugo, which I can't hear without this crazy accent. He's a theologian, and he's from Austria, and he grew up and wrote mostly in England. And he wrote this letter to his niece as she was facing some difficult circumstance. Don't really know what it was she was about to face. It had something to do with what was going on at her school. And he writes to her, Uncle Hugo, whatever your feelings about it may be, the weeks ahead would have to be gotten through. If you go through it with a nobly determined heart, well, the time will pass, and it may do you good. But if your heart is sour, he writes, the time will still pass, but it will probably do you harm. Then he went on to say, I have now come to feel that there is hardly anything more radically mean or deteriorating than sulking through the inevitable. Isn't that a great turn of phrase? Sulking through the inevitable. I love that phrase. You know anybody who puts that on and wears it around, sulking through the inevitable? I'm afraid I've put it on a few times. Lori, you could probably tell me. Lori helps me take it off. Do you do that sometimes too? Sulking through the inevitable. Not a great choice. You have no choice, perhaps, about your current circumstance. But you do have a choice about how you think as you go through what you are now going through. And that will make all the difference in who you become. Paul agrees, and he says, think on these things. And his list is surprising in a way, because not one of his words is especially religious. Some of those words don't appear anywhere else in the New Testament, but right here. Something else about these words, each one has a cluster, an array of meanings that no single English word can quite capture. Though Paul just uses 8 words, which seems plenty, the span of his meaning was saying, when he was pointing us to where our thoughts might best be, whatever is true, whatever real, whatever right and just and honorable and noble, morally good or pure or pleasing or lovely or lovable, whatever is commendable, attractive, winsome, gracious, if there be any excellence or virtue, anything to be spoken well of or admired or praised, think about that. A few years ago, Morgan and Madison's cousin Ellie gave them this little sparkling faceted piece of glass. They call this thing their big diamond. Isn't that right? It's your big diamond. The thing is just glass, but like a diamond, when it catches the sunlight, our light inside doesn't quite do it, but the sunlight, the brilliant sunlight, catches these facets. It throws off brilliant streaks of colors all around everywhere, and if you turn it, they move through the room, up the wall, down the side. They're beautiful, especially on our porch, which doesn't get a lot of light. Held up slowly and turned, they send light flashing and dancing in a rainbow of colors, less like a list and more like a diamond held up in the light. Paul says this is what our mind should be, flashing color of light in the world. But with no shortage of media daily telling us that we are surrounded by a world in cataclysm, hurricanes, floods, wildfires, too little help, insane men gunning down scores of people, thousands, terrorists doing what terrorists do, braggarts in office tossing threats of nuclear war, executive orders, legislative attempts to make the rich even richer and the poor to suffer all the more, and racism unending, and a culture of assaulting women. And the list goes on and on. You can think of more things to put on this list, can't you? Every time we turn on the news or the radio or see it with our own eyes, what moral obscenity would it be to put all of that stuff out of our minds in favor of more pleasant thoughts? Like an ostrich plunking the head down in the sand. That is not what we are called to do. Let's be clear, we are called to know these dark and difficult things. We are called to reflect light there, and these words give us a clue of what that light looks like and can be in us. Paul's words on what to think about are not an invitation to live in denial of the realities that are ugly and painful. The Christ life is unblinkingly honest about tragedy and suffering and injustice. Honest also about the grief we each bear in our own lives. The call is not to turn away from these, but to remain in full awareness of them, to keep thinking about what is true and honorable and just and pure and lovely and full of excellence and worthy of praise. Can you see how the world might need something like this right about now? How about you? The words aren't positive thinking. They're not placebo. They're visionary. It is the divine command to take our minds off the trivial and to renounce unworthy thinking, disordered and cheap thinking, because thought itself is action, for good or for ill. And the movement of the mind may reach further than we have really ever dared to imagine if we can cut it loose alongside these words and in the Spirit's wind. To think of what is true is to see more clearly what is false and to reject it. To think of what is just is to more powerfully oppose what is unjust. To let our minds find their homes in what is lovely and pure and pleasing and noble and worthy of praise is to want more and more to be united with what is lovely and pure and pleasing and noble and worthy of praise. To be participants in all of that stuff. To become the living of these words and their meaning. Helen Hastings sent me a letter after the last time I preached that Sunday afternoon last month. It had to do with that sermon right on target, and it was a bridge to this sermon, which I think might have brought us here. I'd like to read it to you if I can. A. Powell Davies wrote this, who was a minister in the early part of the last century. He says, "Let me tell you why I come to church. I come to church and would, whether I was a preacher or not, because I fall below my own standards, and I need constantly to be brought back to them. I'm afraid of becoming selfish and indulgent, and my church, the Church of the Free Spirit, brings me back to what I want to be. I could easily despair. Doubt and dismay could overwhelm me. My church renews my courage and my hope. It is not enough that I should think about the world and its problems at the level of a newspaper report or a magazine discussion. It could too soon become too low of a level. I must have my conscience sharpened, sharpened till it goads me to the most thorough and responsible thinking of which I am capable. I must feel again the love I owe others. I must not only hear about it, but feel it. In church, I do. I am brought toward my best in every way, toward my best." A. Powell Davies. Grateful for this letter, grateful that you sent it. There are two fish swimming along who happen along an older fish. It's a story that Wallace tells at that commencement address back in 2005. Two young fish swimming along, they happen along an older fish who's going the other direction. "Morning, boys. How's the water?" Two little fish keep on swimming. Dawn's on one of them, turns for a little bit back and looks to the other little fish. Big fish is long gone now. "What the heck is water?" Your mind and your heart have to be tuned, which is why we come here. And what we have to take out of here to set your mind on these things that Paul recommends is to remember that we are buoyed up breathing in and out of us in every moment of our life, an invisible power that is made visible, real, relevant, tangible in your living and in my living. When the Miata first came out, which is a little sports car convertible, they called it the poor man's sports car, so I thought, hey, I finally got a chance to get a little sports car. I still lived in Kansas City, and I really wanted one bad. And it's not practical in Kansas City. It snows like it dumped snow for a while. It would kill that little car and slide around and get pushed off. When I moved to Texas, I thought, oh, 98. I came to Texas. Hey, if I ever needed a convertible, this is where I need a convertible. But it wasn't until, I don't know, the early 2000s before I finally found one that I could afford. I couldn't see them around here. I'd seen a lot in Kansas City, but here where it's convertible weather, no Miata anywhere. Where are these things? Well, I finally find one that I can afford over here at Roger Beasley on Burnett Road. And when I finally get the courage to finally buy the thing, still worried about getting squished by something big, but love the car. Still love the car, beautiful. If I could have figured out a way to make that trunk go backwards and put baby seats in there, we would have still had that car right now. It was a fun car. But you know, the day I drove that off the used car lot over at Roger Beasley, man, I was surrounded by Miatas. I got on 45th Street to get on Mopac. There's a Miata right next to me. I get on Mopac and there's a Miata everywhere. I park at the grocery store. There are Miatas everywhere. My eyes had been tuned to see a Miata everywhere. And still to this day, I don't drive a Miata. But what car do I see more than any other car in the world? A Mazda Miata. This is exactly what Paul is asking us to do. As you pull out your chair this Thursday to sit down at the table, and to return your thanks for a bounty unending, even in our current circumstance, your heart will naturally turn to what is true and what is honorable and what is pure and what is lovely and what is full of excellence and worthy of praise, because this is where we find God, where God finds us, in us, through us, to us, with us, and the gratitude that will pour through you will bring with you a peace that is beyond understanding or explanation. One more story. Talking to children 10 days before he died, Rabbi Abraham Herschel said, "Above all children, remember that the meaning of life for you is to build your life like it's a piece of artwork. How else can that happen unless the gaze of our mind is on what's true and what's just and what's pure and what's pleasing and what's honorable and what's worthy of praise? Because what we gaze upon deeply is what we become." Will you pray with me? May your word, O God, now be living again in our hearing, so it will live yet again in our being and our doing. For Christ's sake, amen.